Accession number 10165, reel number 5.
Martin McLean, reel 5. So you were formed into this Salamanca squad. Where, what happened next?
Well, just prior to... I'd like to go back just a little bit onto prior to this. When I was sworn and received the King's Shilling, the King's Shilling was given to everyone who joined the army, and they'd received it on attestation when they signed the paper. And then you had passed your medical and your intelligence examination, and you were given so many days' pay, so many days' ration allowance, and so many days' lodging allowance. And you were also given the date when to join the regimental depot. And all these 40 men arrived at the depot together. And as I said previously, we landed up and we found that we were forming a squad called Salamanca Squad. When we arrived at the depot, we were all looking around strange to each other, not knowing who we were, eyeing each other up, getting to know people. There was about 42 of us from all places, all over, from Yorkshire, from the north of England, from Durham and Northumberland, all forming up for to make a squad. We met the platoon sergeant, who was a fellow called Sergeant Eldred, and he had a second in command with him, a Corporal Eldred, and then we had a Lance Corporal called Norris. And they were introduced to us as the people, they introduced themselves actually, they informed us that they were responsible for the training us into soldiers for the whole of the period that were at the regimental depot, which was going to be for about 12 to 14 weeks. They sorted us out and put us into barrack rooms. There were so many men that there was an overflow. We fitted into two barrack rooms which adjoined each other, large barrack rooms. The overflow, as we termed it, was shoved into another barrack room. Now, this overflow, although it seems quite a lot of men, was sharply decreased because over a period of time, they start throwing men out of the army on account of not likely to make a good soldier, or some defect they found with them, or some reason or other. So, in fact, it finished up that the whole of the squad was now harboured in two barrack rooms.
What were the barrack rooms like? Do you describe them?
Yes, the barrack rooms are very Spartan, very bare indeed, wooden floors. When you walked into the barrack room, there was rows of beds on left and right with a tin locker above them. The floor was scrubbed, and you'd see a huge coal box stood in the centre of the room with a smaller coal tub, as they called it. And then they had the brushes and the hand scrubbers and the floor bumpers and all them sort of things laying out in front of you in a pattern which every barrack room had, so that you went in the barrack room, you saw a bare barrack room, absolutely hard looking, with the utensils in the middle, followed by the coal bin, followed by the coal tub, and then a coal bin, and then a 6-foot table with two doors at the other end which led into the other barrack room. The beds, they seemed very small when we first looked at them. They actually were a steel frame, made no spring in them whatever, and they're made into two so that the bottom half slid into the second half on wheels so as to make less space in the barrack room. Don't know the reasons why, but that was the normal type of bed that we got in the army. Also, we often wondered why they had cotter pins in the legs so that the whole bed could be taken apiece. A cotter pin is like what you have in the crank on a bicycle, right? It's a tapered piece of steel where you tap it out and you can take the leg off. You can take the legs off. The idea of all that was that for packing, storing away, and secondly, in those days, various units were troubled with a lot of bugs, bed bugs, which used to bite lumps out of you. And arrangements were made for to take your bed to bits and dip them in boiling water. But it wasn't so much prevalent in England as it was overseas. But they had the same standard type of beds seemingly for all over the place. We were given three biscuits. Three biscuits are three small mattresses made of coir, hard, hairy stuff. And then we're given a bolster case as well, a bolster made of the same sort of coir. Given three blankets and another blanket which is called unserviceable, we call it US. That was used for putting on the bottom on the lats of the bed, and then the three mattresses laid out on top of them. We're given two sheets, and that was our lot. We were shown how to make our beds up, the standard pattern, How then, having made the beds down, we could see it, then we were taught how to make them up into standard pattern for inspections, which would happen every day, and they had to be made up every morning, with the exception of maybe one day. But as a young recruit, you had to make them up every day. We're given a locker which is above the bed, and that was yours. And then from there on, they start a whole whirlwind of going back to the doctors for medical inspections, dental inspections. And then from there on, we went to the quartermaster stores where we were kitted out with our kit. Everyone was quite excited. Two uniforms, one an excellent type uniform, one a bit battered and torn, maybe had been to laundry. Received all our brushes, our shirts and kit bags. And then followed a term in the barrack room of how to fold everything up, how to store them in your locker and store them away. Hanging our greatcoats up, and all these things were actually done in a uniform manner, so that when you looked in the barrack room later on, when the squad was well on its advanced training, you'd see nothing but gleaming brasses, everything smart and spick and span. And that was the standard of the army, and it led up to, I thought, making men who were ragged tags from civil life into a very efficient type of neat man. Everything they'd done was neatness eventually, and cleanliness. We came in, some were scruffy, some were dirty, but the sharp adopted into a nice, clean attitude, nice, good-living type of lad. Hard men, some were rogues, some were villains, which I'll talk about later on about. Having got our kits and our stuff bedded into the barrack room, then started, which we thought was a very cruel part with training, is everyone had to be inoculated for TB. It was against... not cholera, typhus. And it was a nasty jab that you got in your arm, which put you out, more or less. You couldn't do much for 48 hours. And at the same time, on the other arm, they'd vaccinate you against, which was quite prevalent at the time, smallpox. And when you received the typhus jab, you were excused automatically in the army for 48 hours, excused all duties. That means you do nothing. You could lay in bed, you could do what you like. But the army didn't think that was good enough for us, so they had everybody stripped off, scrubbing these hard wooden floors, the tables, the utensils, and were absolutely beaten. In other words, their excuse for it was they were working the serum through us. But it was just another matter, instead of having us lazing around, we worked like slaves. But at the same time, we didn't mind. We knew we had joined the army for a hard life, and we're certainly getting it. From there on, after getting over this, some of the men took really bad arms through the vaccination. They had blood poison and swollen arms. I was one of the lucky few. I had little signs and symptoms of vaccination. But some of the poor fellas, it looked like they're going to have an arm amputated. It turned blood poison. And blood poison in them days is not as simple as one talks about it today. A person receiving blood poison could die so very easily because there's no antidote for it. Anyway, we all got over this. And then we start on to training, learning how to put our tarky on properly, how to dress properly. Our main worry was putties. We didn't have any anklets them days. You had great long rolls of khaki cloth with a tape on, which you wound round your legs. 7.5 rolls some battalion had. Others had 8.5 rolls around your leg, with a certain place for it finishing. And you are taught how to put them on so that they wouldn't fall off when walking. That the wooden bag, you couldn't put your fingers up between the overlaps. Once you've put them on your leg, they had to be so fit on your leg. They fit on perfectly and neatly and smartly. We spent hours on this. And of course, our introduction were army, what we call ammunition boots. Big, heavy, new type of army boots. Well, not new. All the army had, but they were new to us. Full of studs and hobnails, one could say, hobnails. They were full of them for infantry marching, heel plates and toe plates. Quite a heavy shoe. But we received these greasy-looking objects from the quartermaster stores, and then we had to get stuck in, cleaning them up every night. Cleaning them, getting rid of the dubbing out of them, getting them so that they shine and polish so that you could see your face and the toe caps and heels. The Durhams were pretty good on this. They insisted on the toes and the heels being polished but they weren't fussy about the rest, because they had a system whereby you could put dubbin on the uppers of the shoe so that they wouldn't crack with the, if you're using them. And we were mainly concentrated on the toes and the heels. We spent hours sitting on our beds doing polishing this, polishing that. We received a set of brushes, like hairbrush, clothes brush, a large polishing shoe brush. They put the brush for putting on, and other brushes, which were brand new, and we received them from the quartermaster stores. These all had to be dipped in red ink and then polished, and our regimental number put on each one of them, so that we polished the backs of these brushes, and they all looked smart and clean. And every piece of our equipment during the process of this elementary training, you could see it in the barrack room, was to have everything that you had marked with your regimental number. As I mentioned at the outbreak, a peculiar thing, everybody now received his regimental number. Some were having difficulty remembering them. My number, which I was surprised to find, was the same number that I had whilst in the Territorial Army, and even to this day I retain that number, which was a Fusiliers number. Everything was marked in this manner so that there was no sort of if a man lost his kit and someone noticed the number, then they knew who had pinched it, and woe betide that man had pinched it. The settling in process carried on for quite some time, and in the meantime we were taken on the square and taught the ruddy elements of drill, the right turns, the left turns, the about turns, in a simple manner with the sergeant. And as time went on, they started barking and shouting more at us to get us to do the things properly. This is where my 2-year training came in very handy. I could do all this sort of drill. I couldn't do close order drill, as we eventually done later on, but all the right turns and the simple things and saluting was the main things that taught you, because a soldier in uniform that couldn't salute was like a sailor at sea without a ship, because they consider you're a never efficient man unless you knew the correct methods of saluting, either walking past an officer, on a bicycle, riding a horse, and all these sort of things. You had to know how to salute. And guards and sentries, the same thing cropped up when we were doing guards and sentries, the correct method of saluting officers with a rifle. All this was, we were fully absorbed in, because we had to learn it. Those who failed on the simple test at the end of the fortnight would be slung out. And to see these men slung out was something pathetic. When they first came in, a lot of us had rags for clothing. We didn't have much, but they were all taken off us and sent off home. We were told not to keep them, get rid of everything. You are now in the army. That was it. In fact, we weren't allowed to wear any civilians at all for 2 years from joining the army. And this is quite common. You were classed as a young soldier up to then, and until you passed 2 years and passed all your efficiency examinations, which there was quite some, then you were not entitled to wear civilians. When these lads were being discharged from the army, they received what they call a Martin Henry suit. It was a disgrace to see them sent out in the street in that manner. There were workshop suits, workhouse suits. The trousers fit you like a drain pipe, right down to the bottom. They gave you great big hobnail boots and a short jacket, which is close-fitting, and I don't know if there's any pockets in it. But you looked like a cutthroat from, like, Bill Sykes walking out the barracks. Big boots on, tight drain-fitting trousers, and a jacket. Why, it was a disgrace to have to walk out in them.
You say these were thrown out after 2 weeks, after some simple tests. What were the simple tests?
Well, the tests were simply some men couldn't turn right or left. There couldn't be orders. Maybe they were working their ticket, as we call it. They became disenchanted with the army and the first goings. You know, they didn't like what was going on. They didn't like the barrack room, and they didn't like the life that we're leading. They would work the ticket, in as much as when the sergeant said right turn or about turn, they'd do the opposite. And they made themselves act the fool. And then they also found out that some people had previous records of crime, which they slung out. And they also found that some people had been in the army before, which they slung out. They wouldn't have them in unless a man dodging in that way, if he wanted to be back in the army and had previous service, there was channels for him to get back into the army. And so our squad was getting gradually depleted in this manner.
How were you? It sounds like you quite enjoyed this the army when you got into it. How were you reacting to the lifestyle, the lack of privacy, and the having to obey all commands and all that sort of thing? You'd been in the territorial, but was it a shock to you, even so, or did you accept it?
Well, no, I don't think it was a shock to me. It was a shock to a lot of the lads because I was used to privacy, lack of privacy at the house at where I lived with my father and family. We had a rough upbringing, and to me, to be in the army, I'd honestly term it was a pleasure. It was, everything was new, a nice bed to sleep in, we're getting well fed, we're getting shouted at and bullied at, but that was nothing at all, because as an apprentice at work, you get shouted and bullied at just the same if you did things wrong. So the army, the bullying shouting mainly come from sergeants shouting orders, which some people couldn't stand.
How far did they go with the bullying and shouting in this early stage?
I wouldn't say they were real bad at all. The only thing that was outstanding in my mind, in as much as the shouting and the bullying, is on the shiner parades of a night time. You had your drill parades, which is constant shouting, turn right, turn left, about turn, carry your rifle, do this, do that. But that was what was what we realised had to come, because we had to be taught how to drill. In the barrack room of the night time, you are locked into your barrack room, every man at a stain. The lance corporal or the corporal in charge of the squad would say, right, shine a parade the night, or shine a parade every night, you could say. The shine a parade the night is boots. The shine a parade is your mess tin and your bed card. Your bed card was a little brass plate which you received with your regimental number on, and you had to get it up from a still brass to really shining brass. And you had to get your boots, as I said, polished up tremendously. And then they'd have all sorts of different things on out for inspection each night. And you'd sit straddle-legged across your bed with your US blanket on the bed in front of you so you wouldn't get polish and stuff on the blankets. And then you'd start polishing the stuff that was for inspection. The corporal or the lance corporal would go away and leave you to your own, and then the lads just chatting and talking to each other in the barrack room and getting on with the work. And then later on, the NCO would come and shout, stand to your beds, and we'd all stand to attention in line at the side of the bed. And then they'd come along and inspect your kit. And as they come to inspect your kit, you had to stand to attention, which is one of the indoctrinations of the army. You stood to attention always when you addressed or spoke to from lance corporal up over. And they'd inspect your kits. And if it was dirty, that's when you got bullied. As a matter of fact, later on, they had a system, when we got better on in training, the good soldiers who could dress properly and salute smartly, and providing they passed out on the shiner parades, they'd be allowed to go out on a Wednesday night, and you were given a free ticket for to go to the Hippodrome Theatre. And it was great going down there, because they were getting all the top turns, which was top turns them days, was Flanagan and Allen and people of that nature. But before you went out on this, you had to be properly turned out. And so they got their own way in that manner. If you failed to keep up a constant cleanliness of your shining prints, keep a good standard going, there was no chance you were getting out them doors of barracks, never mind anything else.
Did you ever fail any article in the shining parade?
No. The only thing I had trouble with was greasy boots. I got them shined up, but never, until I had much more service in, up to the standard that was required. There was different patterns of boots. Some got a heavy brown boots, which seemed to be full of dubbin. Others got a newer pattern of boots, which was issued, and they seemed to come up quicker. Well, unfortunately, I was one of the unlucky ones. I got like an American type boot. They were brown when we got them. We had to stain the leather black, and then we had to try to get them polished. And I had an awkward pair of boots. But anyway, in the long run, standing alongside the men on parade, I was still reasonably well turned out, but my boots were never as good as theirs till years later on when I got the grease out of them.
Would you get bullied for that?
Oh, yes, a little.
And what would happen to you or to someone else who'd failed on this little test?
Well, the corporal or the lance corporal had his own system way of punishing you. And that is as much he'd send you around the square, Dublin, maybe 10 times. And the square was quite a large place. Or he'd make you carry your rifle above your head 10 times. Now, I've heard and many reports of the type of bullying that goes on in the army today. This did not happen in my time. I must say the NCOs treat you very fairly. Watch out the windows you are on, and they saw you're really beat, you know, you're sagging at the knees after maybe three or four times around the square. They say, right, come upstairs, and that was it. But they'd never persecute you like they do, I've heard, in the army today.
So they weren't cruel, they were just enforcing
what
you considered fair discipline.
Well, you've got to look at it this way. You had the skivers in every line of service, every walk of life. A skiver is a man who dodged the least little thing. And if a man didn't know that he was compelled to clean his kits up to the standard that was required, then obviously he was going to dodge and he wouldn't do it.
Well, then you thought it was fair enough?
I thought everything in the army is fair. As a matter of fact, I love the army. I'll be honest with you. The only time I saw some disgruntledness in the army, and that was at meal times. You went over and there's about 10 or maybe more sat on a long table. And someone was detailed as an orderly at the end of the table. You had to go to the cookhouse when the orderly officer was there and draw a tray of food, maybe pie, all in one big mess tin. You'd draw maybe two loaves of bread, rounded loaves of bread, or like tubs. And you had to cut the bread up so that each man received a slice. And it was difficult because some of us weren't so clever at cutting up bread. But every man had to receive his fair portion of bread, or else there was a row. And then when it came to dishing out the potatoes, which was in one dixie, the pie, or it was you had in the other, they used to watch you like a hawk, because every man was starving of hunger. Well, they worked hard in the fresh air, PT in the morning, cross-country runs, drilling the open square.
Yeah.
And so they were hungry, and they wanted every bit of food they could get. And I've seen some funny rows in the dining hall through somebody, the orderly, is being accused of keeping too much for himself. But apart from that, I saw little...
How far would those rows go? Would they go to violence or just...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. When men got arguing like that, if the man that was the orderly was big enough to stand up for himself, and the man who was bullying was the usual tall fella, you know, the big bully type, there'd be a fight outside. But if an NCO saw the men fighting, he'd stop the fight, he'd say, right, meet in the gymnasium, half an hour's time, and there they'd be given boxing gloves under the PT instructor and they'd slug it out. And it was just a matter of settling grievances, it doesn't matter who won, it was just a matter of pride was satisfied by a good fight. That was quite common in the army. So,
would you get caught up in that sort of thing much at that early stage?
No, I've had my fights, have no doubt about that, because I was a young man of high moral values, you know. I was Roman Catholic, and I wouldn't stand for a lot of swearing and abuse and profane language shouted at me. No way. And as years go on, you accepted it. But to me, to be called some of these things that the lads used to shout at you was an insult. So yes, I had fights. And at the time, I could use my fist quite a bit, because I had been in a gymnasium, Will Curley's boxing gymnasium in Gateshead, with an intention of trying to be a boxer. But again, I found that I was too short, and too short in the arm for that. But anyway, yes, I had my fights, as everyone did. But the most cruel thing on this same talk that you ever saw in your life is that if a man was caught stealing money or his mate's kit, if a man was found with a brush or something belonging to his pal who had the other fellow's, or one of his squad mates, I should say, that had his squad mate's number on it, then he was in for a row. They used to take him out on the square and put him in the middle, and everybody had to take part in this. And they stood in a ring around him, and this man was pushed. And he used to try to avoid getting punched by the men, but the men used to close in on him, and every punched him or kicked him until he was nearly crawling out of that group. And this was a great cure for stealing. We had some notorious thieves, or thieves I should say, but they were cured in this manner. They didn't bother trying to steal again, not whilst they were in the barrack rooms or anywhere else, not in the army, because they received such a sound thrashing from everybody in the squad, which I say was cruel. But it was essential, because if a man lost any part of his kit, he was put on a charge. He was taken up before the company commander for for negligence losing his kit, and he was made to pay for it, and in all probability he was punished by giving so many days or hours defaulters, that's jankers as we call it, whereby every spare moment was doing cleaning, scrubbing floors and things like that.
Would people turn a blind, the NCOs would turn a blind eye to that sort of...
The NCOs did, because they had been brought up in the same school, and they knew that if you let the thief away with one thing, he'd come back again. And they knew that this was a sure, unmilitary way, an unrecognised way by army law of dealing with a person of this nature. To deal with a person of this nature, you take the man before the commanding officer or the company commander, and he'd be punished by giving so many hours detention. But that was nothing to some of these hard lads. They'd come back and steal again, particularly money. If they were caught handling the money, they really got the hammer off the men. So we done our own taming of the men in that manner, or we all were tamed that way.
How many were there in your squad of 42 to start with that were thieves or were dealt with in that way?
Well, there's two definite. I know the names of them now, and I know how they were dealt with. I know given the thrashing, but I wouldn't mention names because going down in history, these lads may have been cured of that, may have been good soldiers afterwards. As a matter of fact, I knew one even right up the end of the war, and the other one got killed, but anyway, they did receive heightens for it.
But that was the proportion, just two. How did you get on with the rest of the men then?
Well, we start sorting out our own friends, our own mates, and we start in little groups and pals, and we found that the more we worked together as a squad, the more dependent we were on one another, in as much as when you were marching in drills, it wasn't just the marching in twos and fives, as they call it. Every man had to march in fours. And then on the square, you were taught how to form two deep from fours, forming fours from two deep on the march, doing changing direction right and left, and all this sort of thing. And it all depended upon good teamwork. And we found that by working together, we started getting to know one another so very well. We all pals, a lot of us. But then again, we did have individual pals. Some, for instance, I met up with Jimmy Brown, who finished up with me more or less in the army at the same time. Him and I knocked around together for years. The only separation it had with us, we went to different battalions, and you made pals that stuck with you over the years, right through, in that manner. But apart from that, a squad mate was known as a squaddy, which was quite a common name them day. Oh, you're a squaddy. Some people say a swaddy, but I thought the name was squaddy. We were all friends together, the whole lot of us. Took part in cross-country runs together. We all were boxing together.
What about the swearing? That you were a Catholic. Did that interfere with your friendships, or would that blow over?
All blew over. Nothing at all. I cannot say that anyone held on umbrage, in as much as you had a fight, you settle your score, either they were given a good hammering, or you give the other bloke a hammering, or you finished up square and even in the fight, you're pals afterwards. You're taught that way in the army, not to bear grudge, just get stuck in. I must say, although the training was very elementary and crude, it proved its point, because the men start moulding into one good group of working men, soldiers, all the time. When we first went with all our odds and evens, everybody had their own idea which town was the best. The Mackems and Tackems from Sunderland, they thought they were the bee's knees. The men from Hartlepool thought they were better than the Sunderland and Newcastle people. And this little this thing was carried on with a little bit of bad feeling at one time, but it gradually changed so that it was all accepted in good humour. How do we have Mackem and Tackem? The Newcastle lads would say it, the Sunderland lads. And ye Geordies would always get that slung back there, so you cannot speak proper. And all good humour, all settled down very well. And when we left there, and as time went on, if anyone took ill, the blokes used to go and see them in the sick bay. Whereas before, when they first arrived there, the man was alone, he's on his own, nobody wanted anything to do with it. But when a man took ill, they'd go and see him. Somebody'd go and see him, maybe a number would go and see him. But there's a lot of concern for one another as time went on, and we call that comradeship.
Did you have any connection at that time, in the first few weeks with the officers, or was it just with your sergeant instructors?
The only time we saw an officer them days was a lecture by the company commander. I forget who my company commander was at the time. I think they called him Major McBain. And he was the only one that gives a talk on regimental history. The adjutant and the commanding officer, who were shown in passing, were taught a lot about regimental history, about the formation of the battalions and things like that. And then were shown how the depot runs, a commanding officer, an adjutant, a second in command, and company commanders, and the different breakup of the regiment. And this was done mainly by officers, and of course our own squad sergeants and things like that. So that